God didn't call you to singleness. You're afraid of getting heartbroken.
Some people don't know what controlling is. Sometimes people are like, what if that's just being submissive?
Marriage is about two becoming one, but keeping your individuality.
And if your relationship is not pointing back to him, then it's not a godly relationship at all.
Dear young dating couple, this week's episode is for you.
Yeah, we don't record premarital episodes very often, but this week we had the privilege to sit down with two awesome people who have devoted their ministry to serving couples who are premarital, dating or engaged. So you're in for a treat this week. But before we get into the interview, we just want to let you know, you may not know, that we actually have a premarital course, and it is for couples who are looking to get engaged or are already engaged. It's a 7-week course, and we give it to for free to pastors and mentors. So just have your pastor or mentor shoot us an email, hello@dearyoungmarriedcouple.com, and we'll hook them up with the course.
Yes. So we are interviewing today Tavares and Safa from Godly Dating 101, and it's a great episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they dig into red flags to look out for while dating that can be catastrophic if you actually marry the person. So you're in for a treat, like I said, and they're going to share what these red flags are and also how to navigate them if they pop up for you in your relationship. So listen in.
Welcome to Tavares to the podcast. So glad you're here.
Thank you for having me on, guys.
Yeah, for sure. Tavares and his wife, Safa, are friends of ours. They are just amazing people with an incredible ministry.
And we just wish they live closer.
I know. We live on the other side of the country from you.
All you have to do is book a flight, guys.
Yeah, now. Ditto. Oh, but we really respect Tavares and Safa, and you know, we shared already in the intro about them and their ministry, but we just want to say while we're live here with you, how much we appreciate you guys and what you're doing to pour into the kingdom and prepare so many people for marriage. So thank you.
Thank you for what you guys are doing, because we try to prepare them and then they still go into marriage not knowing what to do. So you guys help us, you know, after we cross that bridge. You know, so what you guys do is extremely helpful as well.
Aw.
Man.
Well, we're looking forward to diving into your new book, Godly Dating 101. It just came out. When did it release?
September 13th, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. And it's been just wildly successful. I mean, people want this stuff. They want to know what to look out for, how to date well, and how to prepare themselves for this beautiful gift that God may or may not give them, right? Because marriage may not be for everyone, but as they're preparing themselves for that, they want a manual, and you guys have provided that. So we're excited to ask you today about some of those things to look out for.
So just what would you say would be the one of those big red flags that people have to look out for with dating?
I would say the biggest thing, since we're starting this off obviously on a Christian podcast, is their walk with God. You know, because truth be told, and I guess this kind of leads into one that I wanted to talk about today, which is inconsistency. But I think it's very common that when you go in church, you know, we place marriage on such a high pedestal that everyone is ready to get married. Everyone is curious about when is that time going to be? Uh-huh. How are they going to look? Are we going to get to have kids? Everyone is thinking about that stage of marriage, you know, so often that we begin to settle for whoever's available, you know, or they feel as though I'm getting up in age. Now I don't have as many options. I'm just going to date whoever's inside the church. You know, so I think it's extremely important that you're paying attention to someone's spiritual life, because I believe if you have that foundation, you guys can work out every other aspect. But when you have someone that you're dating and they're inconsistent, then that's a huge red flag for me, because obviously, you know, a guy can lead praise and worship, the guy can preach the house down, but can he lead you after service? You know, can this person, you know, actually lead the home, lead devotion? Can you lead the children? Because it's not their looks or their beauty that's going to be raising kids, but it's the character that they have, you know. And I heard someone
say, I was just going to ask you to expound on that real quick. What does that inconsistency look like in a red flag? Like if they went, oh, the guy I like is, you know, like you said, on the platform and he's leading worship. But what does that inconsistency look like off the platform?
I would say holy at church and, you know, less driven, you know, when service is over. Because a lot of times we know how to jump, shout, dance, and we know how to run around the church. And then after altar call, we completely forget every commitment we just made to God. Mm-hmm. But it's just like, well, he seems extremely spiritual there, or she seemed extremely spiritual, in the house of God. But in reality, now when you're alone or when you're talking on the DMs or in all of those aspects, do they still show that same godly character? Uh-huh. What I was going to say just now was I heard someone say the key to integrity is the root word, I believe they said, means one, meaning you're the same way everywhere, everywhere you are. And that, kind of resonated because I never really looked at it from that point. I just thought, oh, a God with a character, but actually what it's saying is you're the same exact person in every scenario.
That's really good.
I think it's extremely important that, if you see that this is a woman that you're interested in, then she's godly at church. Yeah, she knows how to do all the right things. She knows how to make herself a spiritual example, to other young ladies when she's at church, but who is she really when church is over? I think, just to start off, that's probably the huge, the biggest red flag that I would say we have to pay attention to, because that's one thing that I loved about Safa, that it doesn't matter what, where you were going to see her, she was the same person. It doesn't matter who it was, whether you were a friend with her or you weren't her friend, you always had the same, perspective of her, and that's what I strive to be, because I know there's been plenty of times where, Tabaris knows how to put on the church mask. Well, Tabaris knows how to put on the mask around his boys, but that's not what God is calling me to. God is not calling us to be one way around certain crowds, but he wants us to have that same consistent character. So to me, the biggest red flag is that's definitely good. Inconsistency, because the Bible says a double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. So if this guy's unstable in his walk with God, you should expect there to be inconsistencies all throughout a relationship.
That's really good. I love that you bring up that scripture, because it brings in all his ways.
Yeah.
And that's a quick way of seeing, okay, if he's inconsistent in all these other places, then most likely, even with me, he's showing up right now.
Mm. Yeah.
But maybe later he's just going to, that's another way he's going to start being inconsistent when it doesn't suit him.
Yeah.
Right.
Or her.
Right. A lot of us, we don't think of it that way. And I think, a lot of times they'll overlook certain aspects, whereas he's spiritual, but he's inconsistent in other areas, or he's consistent in his kindness and giving and all that, but he's not consistent with his walk with God. But the Bible makes it clear that it's only so long you can put on that front, and eventually your true character is going to show. So it's important that we're paying attention to someone who you're not worried about how are they, when I'm not there. You want to be able to know that this person has the same character no matter where they are. So that's why I believe the key is finding a woman or a man of God, who has integrity.
That's so good. What would you say, to someone who hasn't been in the relationship long enough? Because there's a lot of people that are worried about going into relationships, right? Maybe they've been burned a couple of times, so they're, tentative, and they're looking for these inconsistencies. They don't see them yet. What would you tell that person, going into a relationship? How long should they be looking for this? What is the attitude around that, worry that they should hold?
And that's the key. They're worrying, and that's the problem. To love is to be vulnerable, so I don't believe anyone should go into it naive and feel as though, okay, well, they're perfect. No, you're kind of setting yourself up for failure. But if you go searching for a problem, you're going to find it. The Bible says, certain things are lovely, just, pure, a good report. Those are things you should be thinking about. But unfortunately, a lot of times we go into it with our insecurities, with our baggage. So now I'm looking and I'm waiting on the opportunity for you to lie. I'm waiting on the opportunity for me to not to trust you. Oh, well, the last guy cheated, so let me see if Pizza Hut is texting your phone. Just you're waiting on that moment. Eventually, you're going to find something, even if you're creating that narrative to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's important that you go into it, using wisdom, using discretion. But sometimes people are great at masquerading who they are if that person is actually lying. So that's why I always tell people it's great to have accountability partners, or paying attention to how they treat other people, or what you're hearing about them. Because a lot of times your friends are not hating on you, or they're not, jealous of you, but they see things you don't see. Of course, I'm going to be extremely nice to my girl. I want her to marry me. I want her to see, I want her to see the best in me. So I'm going to do everything for Safa to be impressed. That does not mean I'm going to show respect to anyone else. And a lot of times it leads back to the inconsistencies, because a lot of people, they don't have that integrity. They're just, kind when they want something, so it's important to pay attention to how others view them and how their leadership views them. If this is a guy, whereas you think he's spiritual. You guys don't go to the same church. But his pastor knows this guy has not showed up to one prayer meeting in 6 months. You know what I mean? But pastor probably knows he's not as spiritual as the rest of the world thinks, you know? So it's important that we're paying attention to not just the way we feel about it, but what are others saying?
Right.
And it's not because others, you know, should be able to dictate what God is going to do in our lives, but others can also point out red flags that we
may be
in ourselves.
So Tavares, that's a super good question, right? Like in that area, how does somebody bring somebody on board? Like, what does the conversation look like? You said accountability partner. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think some people know what to ask for. Like, yeah. what are they doing to get that person on their side so that they have the license to do that?
Yeah. So I really wish Safa was here, because before we got to the engagement point, Safa went, you know, full blown detective mode. I didn't know she was asking my friends. I knew Safa's dad is a mechanic, and my pastor went to her dad. So I didn't even know that it was all these connections there. So Safa had her dad inquiring to our pastor about me, and I had no idea, you know, our friends, you know. So she spoke to a lot of people about me. So she's definitely the expert on being TIA. But I will say it's important that it's another part with a vulnerability, because like a lot of times we think about having accountability partners. We only think about it in terms of, man, I'm starting with less. You know, do you have any advice? Can you help me? No, but sometimes it's also, hey, I'm pursuing this woman. I don't really know how that works, you know? So finding those godly marriages that, I'm not saying you want to copy them, but you see traits in them that you would love to have in your own marriage.
Sure.
You know, being willing to go to those couples, because I've gone to a married couple and I've, you know, watched people from afar observing, you know, I've never gone to someone in regards to that. It was mainly just a matter of, you know, I'm struggling in this area. Can you help mm-hmm. me? But I've had other married people tell me, like, this is where, you know, my wife and I had a huge argument over something silly that I said. You know what I mean? And if you just don't go about it this way, you can avoid so much of a headache. You know, so I know it's possible that, you know, you can have those people, but you just have to go up to them and tell them. And obviously no one wants to feel as though, well, I have problems in my marriage, I have problems in my life, you know. But if you want help, you have to make yourself vulnerable. Confess your faults one to another.
That's
you
right.
You know, pray for one another, and that's where you find healing. But unfortunately, we don't confess any faults, and we don't pray for anyone unless they have cancer or something. And it's just like, no, but you're not going to find healing in regards to your emotional problems or regards to your insecurities if you don't have people in your corner. So I think it's just important that we're just going to people and, you know, being willing to be vulnerable. And obviously that's not everyone in the church you can lean on, but there are some people and God will lead you to them if you pray about it.
Yes. So good. Why do you think, Tavares, and we'll ask you about more red flags, but just starting with this one, you know, the integrity piece and consistency, why do you think people ignore the red flags? They see the inconsistencies, but they ignore it. Why is that?
I think sometimes we get our own idea of what love should look like, you know? So if I'm used to dysfunction, I'm not worried about all, you can tell me, this woman has a less issue. I don't care. I'm used to it. You know, so when you're used to something, that environment seems normal. You know, there was a time where we're leaving for church in the morning. My dad always cooks prior to service. So I don't know if you guys ever tried Jamaican dishes, but my dad is making curry goat in the morning. So
I haven't had that one.
Hey, but it's nice to try. So my dad has the pot on high. He goes he's supposed to turn it off prior to leaving. He always turns it off prior to leaving. My mom goes, turns it off prior to leaving. So when it's time to leave, he didn't pay attention. He turned it right back on. We left the church, come back home. It's like, why is the house smoky? His mistake was he opened a pot in the house. Like, dude, we smelled like burnt curry goat for months. Everyone thought I was in middle school smoking cigarettes. You know, we smelled bad for months. Like the smell did not die out for months. Like, so it's in all the clothes, like the closets were just done for. But the thing is, after a day, you know, I was so used to the smell. Everyone else thought, you know, this kid smokes, you know, but I was just so used to it. And it wasn't until you went outside that you realized, oh, well, that's not normal. And when you go back inside, the smell hits you again. So that's why I'm saying, like, we get so used to being in dysfunctional moments because I'm so used to it. I've seen that pattern in my family. I've seen that pattern. Unfortunately, even in the church, know, that it doesn't matter that, you know, this person is inconsistent, because all I've seen was inconsistency, that this to me looks normal.
Yes.
You know, so I think it's important that we recreate or reframe, I should say, what we define as normal, allow God to tell us what's normal. Because if we're only looking at Hollywood, or we're looking at our relationships, or we're looking at divorces in our families, or, you know, people in the church that probably did not have the best examples, if we think that's what God has for us, then I'm willing to set up for whoever there is, you know, whoever doesn't make me feel good right now, rather than looking that something should be more, you know?
Yes.
So I think it's important that we have to revisit what it is that we're both desiring and what it is that we're expecting. Because a lot of times, a lot of people, they know they deserve better, but if all they've seen is less, then to them it's just fine.
Yeah.
Wow. How do people get that better image of what they could have? What would you tell, like, what's the, yeah, like, hey, do this, in order for them to, like, not have that burnt goat smell or whatever?
Well, for one, don't touch any stoves prior to service. But I think I know part of it is definitely therapy, but yeah, I feel like for the most part, and even if you're not going to a professional therapist, but willing to communicate what it is that you're feeling, what you're seeing. And I say that because I feel like there's a stigma in, you know, being vulnerable and expressing our emotions and our feelings, because we don't want to, you know, say like, I'm afraid of getting married because I saw my mom get divorced. You know, a lot of people, I'm content being single. God called me to singleness. God didn't call you to singleness. You're afraid of getting heartbroken. You know, so I think it's important that we go to someone and allow ourselves to kind of unload all of that, because I think a problem is we suppress everything. And then when you suppress it, you never really resolve anything. It's just kind of beneath the surface. So if you really want to get a new vision, you, one, need God to renew your mind. God's not going to renew your mind without the word. And you also need to be willing to go to someone and, you know, not like just dump it all on them, but have someone, you know, be willing to talk with you so you can realize that what you're feeling is not, for one, you're not alone, but you shouldn't be feeling as though, okay, well, this is just life, you know, because unfortunately we just go through life like, well, life is hard, but life is not supposed to be that way. So I don't know. I've tried to find other godly examples that I can lean on when I see couples that I think, well, I don't want to be like that. I'm not saying I avoid them, but I also don't take advice from them, you know?
Right.
You know, what I try to do is, you know, reshape how things are in my marriage. Not that I've figured it all out. I still struggle. I still, you know, frustrate my wife. I got all these tools from you guys that are marriage seminar, and my wife thinks I'm trolling her whenever, you know, she swears I'm trolling her, and partly I am, but I'm making sure we're on the same page when we communicate, you know? So I'm just like, so what you're saying is, you know, and I'm trying to do that. I'm not sure what they're teaching my son in Sunday school at church, but if Zion thinks, and bear in mind, it has not been any heated argument like that, but we're in the middle of breaking stuff down to get to the root of it, and Zion will look at us and he's like, peace be still. And I'm just like, like, what are they teaching you at church, bro? Because I never taught you to say peace be still.
Oh,
if you think,
my word.
But
he sees the storm up ahead.
Yeah, he's like, I know what's coming, you know? But and he mainly says it to me. He doesn't believe his mom needs to calm down, but it is what it is, you know? But I don't like avoiding conflict in front of the kids. So I would prefer it, because it's like, if it escalates, she doesn't want the kids to see that. But also to the effect that I want them to see that this is how a healthy relationship should look. You guys should be able to address it. And before we go a little bit.
Hey friends, we'll be right back to our interview. But one quick note. If you love what you're listening to, you might also enjoy going through our card decks that we designed to help couples stay connected and in each other's world.
So there's Foundations, which is our starter deck, and it's all about boosting your communication skills. And then there's Sexpectations, which is all about spicing up your intimate connection. And then there's Realizations, which is a deck for all couples, but especially dating or engaged couples who want to see how well they really know each other. So grab a deck or two, or three, by heading over to our website, dearyoungmarriedcouple.com/cards.
All right, back to the show.
All right, we took a tiny pause because Safa was able to join us. So welcome, Safa. Glad you're with us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So Tavares has been on a roll sharing all these tips about why people don't pay attention to red flags. And the first red flag that we've talked about is inconsistency. So we're going to go right into the next red flag, and we'll put you on the spot, Safa, since you joined us. What is another red flag to look out for?
I'll just take the one towards.
She's still in my notes.
That's a big red flag.
Say it again.
Lust driven. You know, I feel like it's we have a tendency to sometimes ignore that, especially in a dating relationship. I think people will get into this mentality that once you get married, lust kind of solves itself. Solves lust, which is not the truth.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You know, we just tend to ignore it because we see what we want. And regardless, you're just like, oh, that's something that can be fixed in the long run. You know, I will satisfy that in them. And we just look over it. Like, you know, I have to take care of that. And then, you know, when we get married, that might not be the case. And I think we just ignore it based off of our own desires. We see this to us. They look like, you know, a good fruit. They look like, you know, something that's appeasing to our appetite. And we just really examining and evaluating who they are as a person and what their flaws are and things like that.
That's good. Mm-hmm. That's good. That's a big one. Like, okay, what do you think would be an appropriate amount of, let's say, affection? Mm-hmm. And what would be, okay, well, that's lust driven. Like, how do we differentiate between the two? Because some people are like, oh, just love is love. Like, you know, we're drawn. And of course we have chemistry. This is good, you know? We're on a roll here. But like, how do you know that it's not just like, oh, it's like quote unquote chemistry. And it's like, no, that's less driven right there.
Yeah. So I think that's a great question that she said, because I wanted to chime in when she was talking about it, because I've had people ask like, so how far can I really go? But my thing is, I think the real issue that we need to understand is that if the conversations are constantly heading a certain direction, then you know what this person's motives actually are. You know? And I say that because, let's be realistic, you're not marrying someone just because they speak in tongues. You're not marrying someone just because they go to church. You know, you want to be attracted to this person, but relationships come with a lot of aspects. So you want to have that physical attraction. You want to have that spiritual connection. You want to have that emotional connection. But if it's never about me learning about you, it's just me learning about your body, or me never complimenting you on your characteristics, for complimenting you on things you do, or complimenting you on areas I see you're growing in, but it's just a matter of, man, you look so good. Man, I wish we could do this. Man, you know, and it's just like, you can tell where your motives are. Then it's just what they call eros love, you know, erotic love. Yeah. It's just sex that's really driving them. You know, when I think about that, I think about Amnon in 2 Samuel 13, whereas he loved his sister Tamar. You know, that's what the Bible says. He loved her to the point where it's making him sick. But then after he gets what he wants, the Bible says he hates her more than he ever loved her. Because it was never actual agape love. It's matter of driving him. You know, he was just trying to get his needs met. So that's why we see a lot of people get into relationships, or unfortunately get married. And now that, you know, okay, well, time in bed is over. Where's the connection? It's not really much to it, you know, and that doesn't sustain relationships. So it's important that you pay attention to what is it that's attracting them to me. And if it's only physical, while it's great, you may find your spouse, you know, radically attractive. But if that's all it is about them, then they don't necessarily care about you. So it's important that we pay attention to that, so we're not getting into a relationship for someone who just wants us for our body, because unfortunately, someone else in the world is going to have a nice body. And if all they care about is that, you know, then things can go south really fast. Yep.
That's good. I love that. It brings to mind that scripture, out of the mouth, the heart speaketh.
Yeah.
So if all there's talking about is what they want to do and trying to go there, they're obviously ignoring the other factors that are actually very important for knowledge, like to know and to grow in knowledge about that person, because that's really where intimacy is.
So what their mouth is speaking is a good litmus test on where their heart is driven. So that is it lust driven? Now, are they, if they're complimenting you and they include a physical compliment, but they're also sharing a lot of other compliments about your traits or observations about your deeds, and you know, your dreams, and you guys have well-rounded conversation, physical compliments or affection is okay. It's not a red flag, but it's what are they driven by?
And also, like, one thing that just throw in here too is that, like, if someone's really pushing for physical, sometimes, yes, it is lust, and sometimes they are low in EQ, emotional intelligence, because, like, let's say they got stunted from, there's a lots of different reasons people could get stunted in their emotional intelligence or in their emotional growing up, that they're not even, they don't know how to connect.
Other than through
physical. Emotionally. They don't know where what to ask or what to talk about or how to talk about their feelings or thoughts. 100%. And so I mean, all that they know is like, well, like closeness is like physical.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. and that's what they go for because that's all they know.
And that's the key, because like I honestly believe there are some people that it's not lust driving them. They don't know how to hold a conversation.
Yes.
And a lot of that can be driven from things like pornography and things like that. But that's what I'm saying. We have to reframe what we're viewing as normal, because if that's just how I think I should communicate with women, it worked that way when I wasn't saved, or it worked that way for all the guys I do know, then in my head, I should be this way. And I told Safa this one time in the past, because, you know, we tried to talk right out of high school, and thankfully it failed because I wasn't mature at all. Not that I'm mature now, but I was worse then. It was just the fact that anytime Safa was like, hey, what are you doing? I'm just like, no, just seeking God, just reading the Bible, you know? And it wasn't me genuinely trying to, you know, over-spiritualize and try to impress her. I was really doing that. Every time she would ask, what am I doing? I'm just like, oh, just reading the Bible. And she's looking at it like, dude, do you want to talk to me? Like, here's the compliment. It's just a matter of, oh, he's just seeking God. And it's just like, am I interrupting him seeking God? Like, that's how it seems.
You know, she's so like, how dare I, you know?
You know what I mean? Just like when I hit him up, he's seeking God. So it's like, this is not going to work out. You know, so I think it's important that we understand it's nothing wrong with complimenting a person. Like you said, it's just a matter of well-rounded, you know, conversation. So it's some people that I genuinely feel as though they want to know a person on a deeper level. But in their mind, intimacy is sex. And truth be told, intimacy does not mean sex. That's just one physical aspect of it. But intimacy is a lot more dealing with conversation and connection and emotional engagement. Way more than that. So if that's all I was thinking about, then like you're saying, like that's a really low EQ, because you're not realizing it's not necessarily connecting you the way you think you are. It just connects you in that moment, not necessarily for a lifetime.
Yeah, that's solid. Yep. All right. Take us to the next red flag. How many do we have, by the way?
Like a thousand and six, but
six.
We're gonna Joe Rogan this podcast. I'll say one, and let Safa chime in. I'll say controlling, and the word is too. I'd rather say it than she says it, because if she says it, then it's gonna sound like the husband is controlling the wife. But I'll say controlling is definitely one that's up there, because I see a lot of marriages whereas the woman has no voice outside of him. Or unfortunately, you see the same thing in reverse. And it's just like,
Well,
can you think for yourself? Now, I'm not one to say like, hey, I want to text Adam like, hey, bro, let's play basketball, and say me and Adam should be playing ball at 12 at night and his wife doesn't know where he is. Like, that's not what I mean. But I mean to the sense that you're not allowed to do anything or move anyway without this person telling you you're allowed to.
Yeah.
And then it's no longer a matter of respect. That's a matter of you're being controlled and manipulated. You know, and everyone talks about how Jezebel would manipulate Ahab to do whatever it was that, you know, she desired. But I'm just like, I think it's a same red flag when you feel as though, you know, you're allowed to do something because of them. Not necessarily that it's a matter of respect, but just a matter of you do this because this person says you can, you know, and to me, that's an issue. But I'll let you jump in there. I want to go too deep.
No, I was just, as you were saying that, I was thinking some people don't know what controlling is. I know you kind of dived into it a little bit, but sometimes people are like, what if that's just being submissive, you know? I think there's so much confusion sometimes, because I know that's something that I struggle with just in general in life. I'm just like, you know, what's the difference between being submissive? Like, where do you draw that line at time? In order to first discover, in order to find that red flag, you have to know what the difference is between the two.
What is the difference? How would you kind of guide someone while they're dating to know the difference?
Yeah, so that's a nuanced thing. So I would 100% prefer Adam to jump in whenever he feels like it. I believe that it's a huge difference. In a few ways, right? If Safa wants to, right now we're married, so it's a little bit different. But if Safa wants to go hang out with her girls, she doesn't need my permission.
Yeah.
But I think it's a matter of respect. Like, hey, babe, do we have anything going on later today? Because
right.
The girls are going to do this, and I'm just checking to see if we're good. And I'll just be like, well, I don't care. Like, no, we're not doing anything. You don't have fun. But if it's a matter of where girls want her to hang it out because they're just doing whatever they're doing, and she's like, well, I'm not sure because he doesn't really let me go anywhere, then she may not say that, but you know she's thinking it.
Okay.
You know, so I think it's a huge thing. And I honestly think, you know, let me ruffle some feathers and maybe you guys will chop this out of the podcast. But I honestly think that's, unfortunately, the way sometimes we operate with our pastors. Because I believe a pastor is a shepherd. He should be helping to guide you. But that doesn't mean he says, well, Adam, this is what you do no matter what. And it's like, he can just say that at any point. And it's never a matter of prayer. It's never a matter of conversation. Then you know it's not necessarily I'm submitted to leadership. I'm just the control. I'm just doing whatever they tell me. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a matter of you're still allowed your individuality. There was a guy who said that our wedding, you know, he was just like, marriage is about two becoming one, but keeping your individuality. And people are looking at him like, dude, you are so drunk right now. But it made so much sense to me.
It is. That's good.
A lot of people get married, and then in my desire to be one with her, I love golf. She hates it, but now she has to go because I love golf. And then it doesn't make sense. She's not allowed to embrace things that she desires. You have to embrace what I desire.
That's so good.
So I think it's important that you're paying attention to, you're still allowed to thrive. You're still allowed to become who God has called you to be. And you're not becoming who I want you to be. Because if I'm controlling who you become, that I'm God in your life. I'm an idol in your life. It's not necessarily me leading as the husband or her helping steer the ship as the wife. No, it's just a matter of control and manipulation. So I feel as though a lot of that, you know, a lot of trying to get to that respect aspect is going to be uncomfortable conversations and me doing stuff I don't like and she doing stuff that she doesn't like. But it's not a matter of me doing it out of harm or me doing it because you're just going to do what I say. But it's a matter of kind of being willing to compromise. So you have to be willing to find compromise in relationship.
That's so good. I think what's important is that people feel autonomy. Like, I could do otherwise. I think that's what God does with us, right? God doesn't force us into heaven, even though he wants everyone to be in heaven.
That's right.
I mean, he could force us to give us, you know, to give him hugs, but that's really not what love is. Love is free choice. Yeah. And so when we try to manipulate people into love, that causes resentment.
Yeah.
And that never ends well. And we've seen a lot of times too, like where people get controlling is because they felt not in control in their life and other relationships. Yeah. So they feel like by taking control, I won't lose control, or I won't lose, you know, these things, people that are dear to me.
Yeah. And you mentioned the pastoral relationship. So, I think that's so one example of where people feel so controlled. And so they play that out in their marriage. But another relationship is the parental relationship. You know, if they weren't given choices and they weren't shepherded where they could still keep their individuality, like the person said at your wedding, you know, then they're gonna probably play that out because it feels good to be in control finally.
Man, there's such a delicate balance, like you're saying, Tavares, because like at one point, like I do ask my wife, like you're saying, hey, it's not like a permission, but it's like, hey, I respect you enough that if I just take off, I know that that's gonna like affect you. That's going to cause maybe you angst, or like I'm trying to control you by my, you know, have fun with the kids.
Yeah.
Even if I know she'd probably be okay with it. But the way that you do it is showing deference and showing like, hey,
right,
I don't want to inconvenience you if it would. That's good. Because I think control is a huge thing.
Yeah.
In marriage, but also in relationships, we've seen it.
Yep.
What would you say, Safa?
I agree. And I think, you know, as you guys were talking, I was here thinking like it's so hard when you're dating to, I guess, put a line between what's control and what's not, because you're so caught up in this person.
Uh-huh.
You are so infatuated at times that you're just like, oh, I'll do it because I love them. Even though it's something that you would have necessarily have done in the first place. And so it becomes clouded because you're like, you don't think of it as control. You might not see it till after you're married. Then you let your guard down and things become a little bit more normal. And you're like, man, this person, you know, he's always telling me what to do. And it's so hard to see that. And I think in that sense, accountability is so important. Or even having, counseling or something when you're dating, because people are going to see things that you don't know because you're so clouded. Your judgment is so clouded.
Yeah.
So it's just very important to have someone to be accountable to, because sometimes you're not going to see all the red flags. And that's one of them, because you paint this person in this perfect picture, you know?
Uh-huh.
And so you do what they say and you don't think anything.
Yeah.
Right.
So good. Well, just to highlight and underscore what you just now said, you are infatuated when you're dating for up to, I think, 18 months or a year and a half.
Yeah.
So you're going to miss stuff. You're going to miss stuff. Like and especially if it's been hard for you in dating, you're not going to want to, there's that gambler's fallacy, right? Like, I've already put this much in and I might as well just put a little bit more in to make sure it wins. But you really could be sinking your money into a losing proposition.
Right. 100%.
Yeah. All right. Is there one more red flag you want to share before we wrap this up?
The bonus round?
Well, I would say...
I'm still my notes. Do you have one?
I do. You're not drawing you closer to God. I don't know if you mentioned that prior to me being here, but if they're not drawing you closer to God, then that's probably a good indication that you're not supposed to be with this person, because marriage, relationships, everything leads back to him. And if your relationship is not pointing back to him, then it's not a godly relationship at all.
Yep.
You go to church and you're involved in all these ministries and you're doing this and that and this, but together, you're not growing together. You're not, pushing each other towards Christ. Then that's a red flag. Growing up, I don't remember where I learned this, but I always picture in my head a triangle. And let's say Tavares is at the bottom end of the triangle and I'm at the other end and God is at the top. The closer we get to each other is the closer we get to him. That's how it should be. That's how our relationships should be. If we are not growing closer to God with each other, then we shouldn't be together.
But so what Safa was saying, that just reminded me of the story with Noah, where it says, but he found grace in the eyes of God. You know, it just makes me think about the aspect, whereas the Bible doesn't make it clear if anyone else in his family was living right. Bible doesn't make it clear, well, we know the rest of the city wasn't living right. But it's the fact that because of his walk with God, then it saved his family, It's key, kind of like in the beginning where we're saying with the inconsistent character, aiming to be godly everywhere, because you want to make sure that when you aren't where you need to be, your spouse is still consistent in seeking God. Your spouse is still a person, isn't going to just let you live by the wayside. And that's what I always tell people in regards to our book. One of the reasons why I wanted to write a book is because most people I've seen leave the church is because of the person they were dating or the person they got married to.
Wow.
So it's really important that you're not with someone who, when you're struggling, they just let you keep on going. But you need somebody who's going to be willing to pick you up, or someone who's going to, I don't want to say allow you to be weak, but can carry you in those moments where you feel as though, man, well, I'm just struggling, like where Job is seeking God on behalf of his children because, they're doing whatever. But you need to make sure that you're somebody who's constantly seeking God, because there's going to be some times where you feel as though you don't hear his voice. And you want to be married to someone who can't hear his voice.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the main important thing for a spouse.
I love that.
Awesome.
And that litmus test would, how do you feel? Do you feel closer to God? I love that. Do you feel closer to God or farther away from God every time you guys get together?
Yeah. Yeah. Envisioning that triangle.
Yeah, that triangle.
Like, are we moving closer to God as we get closer to each other? Because if not, we're not on that triangle that we should be on.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So good. Where can they find your book, guys?
Well, I will mainly say Amazon, since it's the most convenient nowadays, but wherever books are sold.
Yep. Books a Million, Barnes and Noble's, Amazon,
GodlyDating101book.com.
But there's,
or you guys can show up to Adam's church and we're gonna put up a table, whereas they're but they,
we'll do it. Just ship me a box. We'll sell them.
We appreciate you guys having us on, man.
Yeah, oh, man. Absolutely. And also, they have a podcast, Godly Dating 101. And when this airs, they will have just relaunched a new season. So go ahead and go to the Godly Dating 101 podcast and subscribe so that you can get their weekly episodes, especially if you're unmarried. But even if you are married, if you're discipling people, you can get a lot of good nuggets that can be passed along because this generation listens to podcasts. And so you can just text them a link to something that you know they should listen to and be a good way to minister to them as well.
Yeah. So we end every episode by asking the question, what do you wish you would have had or advice you would have had at the first part of your marriage? And then fill in the blank, dear married couple.
Sure. I wish someone would have told me that intimacy was more than sex. I was one of the people who viewed it as just physical connection. At one time, my wife told me, we're not connected. And I'm like, we literally see each other every day. Like, how are we disconnected? We have not been disconnected for how long? Quarantine forced us together. But was really her way of saying, like, we're around one another, but we can become roommates if we're not careful. You know? I think it's important that you learn how to communicate with your partner, learn how they want to be loved, and that way you're feeding into that. And that's what I wish I would have been told.
That's good.
I just wish I would have had better habits of communication. I grew up in a household with my parents. I was born and raised in the Pentecostal Apostolic Church, and my parents, great parents, still married to this day, but communication. As Tavares mentioned in the episode, we don't argue around the kids. We don't. That's just, I don't know how to argue. I don't argue, period.
He doesn't want to.
You're going to be with yourself. That's how I look at it.
That's what's happening. And I will just, that's why Zion tells me peeps be still good. Yeah.
Every time Zion does even have an ounce of an argument, even if it's just a discussion, he says, peeps be still mommy and daddy. Because he doesn't see his argument.
So, I love it.
That's the better way to communicate, because I feel as though that would have really, really helped us just be closer and just be able to understand each other a little bit more.
So good.
That's awesome.
So good. Arguing well is such an important skill. Yeah. And confidence. It's a confidence. Once you've done it well enough times, then you can start having the confidence that you could go through big stuff and still get through it.
Yeah.
Well, it's true.
Man,
thank you so much, you guys. You guys are fantastic, and we appreciate how you're pouring into dating couples all over the world. So thank you so much.
Thank you. It was a pleasure being here with you
guys. All right, folks, go get that book, Godly Dating 101 book.
Do it.
.com, right?
Yes.
All right, and we'll link it in the show notes as well as their podcast. All right, we'll see you guys next week.
All right, friends, we really hope that you got a ton out of today's conversation. And if you want help, if you want personal guidance with individual counseling or couples counseling, or even help with you as a couple reaching the goals you have, just reach out. Give us a call at 916-678-1797 or shoot us an email at hello@dearyoungmarriedcouple.com.
No matter where you are in the world or in your marriage, we can set up a counseling session with you and we can work toward progress. We also post marriage advice regularly on our Instagram, which is @DearYoungMarriedCouple. And we'd love for you to join us in conversation there. All right, see you next week.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.